happen to discuss the big issues facing the world at the moment from thebigsmoke.com. Alex Selios. G'day, Alex.
Hello, how are you?
I'm a little bit perturbed about one of the items we're going to talk about tonight, but tell me about buying gifts for people that aren't really thoughtful.
One of the weirdest things that I find about working in an office environment is the sort of obligation to do Kris Kringle.
Yeah.
Or do some sort of gift exchange. And the interesting thing about it is there's almost a disconnect between when we buy gifts for our family and friends and when we buy gifts for office staff or colleagues.
Yes.
And we tend to be very generic around that. It tends to be, you know, a mug, Christmas mug filled with lollies or a bottle of wine or just, it's very generic. And often it's because it's Kris Kringle, but also because most of us don't really care.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're just doing it. And psychological research was recently done with the University of British Columbia. And basically what they did was they did a number of studies between colleagues. And they found that when one was given a gift which was considered cheap or thoughtless, they actually felt differently about that person. And I know that we're meant to think things like it's the thought that counts.
Yeah.
But the problem is there was no thought.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, I have only worked in a couple of places that have done the Kris Kringle type thing, and most of the time it's treated as a bit of a novelty and as a bit of a joke. You have a limit of sort of $10 or $15
yeah.
and you try and buy a joke gift, but then you remain anonymous anyway, so it kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah,
but
I think it's also about, even if it's a novelty gift, like I hate novelty gifts anyway, so I'm real spoiled when it comes to that, but the whole idea of giving a joke gift, I remember once I was actually given a pencil case with Minions on it, you know, the cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought it was, I didn't find it funny or clever, and it just felt like a generic, innocuous gift. And it's interesting, though, that the actual relationship between people can change when given good or bad gifts. And as terrible as we want to make that out to be, the reality is it has an expected positive effect on a relationship when someone feels you've put thought into what you're giving them. Even if it's a joke, it could be a joke that's specific to their personality or something that they like or something funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be expensive, but it's the thought behind it. So there's a big difference in the research between gifts to strangers and colleagues around thought and also in established relationships. So this is when people often just give gift cards because they can't think of what else to buy the person. That also has a similar, according to the research, shift in the relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I guess it depends on the person too, because, I mean, I have a philosophical issue with, and moving away from Christmas for a moment, but the concept of a wedding registry where somebody tells you what they want for a gift. And I think, well, that's not what gifting is all about. But having said that, now that that has become such a norm, I feel lost unless there is a gift registry.
Well, and this is the thing, because what are you meant to do? But I found one of the most interesting findings of the research was that when men received cheap or poor gifts on average, they then perceived that relationship with their partner, if it was from their partner, as having less in common. So you kind of, they looked at it like, we don't have that much in common and we probably won't have a future together. That's literally what they thought according to the research. Whereas women who received a bad gift from their partners thought that their relationship would continue for longer than those who received the good gift.
Wow. Okay.
It must have something to do with the comfort level. You know, it's this psychological defense mechanism when it comes to gifts and why people give gifts and how that makes the person feel. So the thought counts. It's the thought that counts for sure, but be thoughtful.
Yeah, that's, well, if you haven't already bought your Christmas gifts, think very carefully about them. I know that we've got a Kris Kringle operating in the office here, and I won't be here at the time they do it, so I've opted out of it. But I know, I hear that a number of people have asked to change the person that they've drawn out of the box. So
yeah.
I wonder what that means. Moving right along, I like to think I'm pretty good with names and faces, but occasionally I'll have this mental block when I'm speaking to somebody that I know very, very well, and forget their name in the spur of the moment. Apparently, we're calling people we know by the wrong names.
Yes. So I have to say that this research is really about our mental semantic network. So it's about why we think things we think. Why do certain words in our minds correlate with people, places, or things? And there was a group of people, around 1,700 people, and they had to go through and try to understand misnaming somebody, or how they felt when they were called the wrong name. And the interesting thing about it was it had a lot more to do with how much you loved the thing you're calling. So for example, if my mother called me by my dog's name, she has, according to the research, a deep affection for my dog, as opposed to calling me the same name as some random person from her childhood. That doesn't happen. So it has to do with that affection and that link and that care. But what I found really funny, and this is going to upset all the cat lovers, those who would often use the wrong name often said the dog's name, but very rarely the cat's name.
Well, that's understandable.
Why? If it's all about the love you have for the person and the object or the animal that you're caught misnaming the person,
yeah.
It's basically saying that the dog is more important to you than the cat.
Yeah, well, nobody really loves their cat, do they?
I think I have a friend. She has a beautiful white cat called Bentley, and she sees it as her other child.
Okay.
So yeah. I think that it's interesting, though, that dogs are seen as a central part of pet-owning families, whereas cats less so. But, of course, there's always flaws in this kind of research.
Well, see, I also had it probably has something to do with the way the cat sees itself in the relationship as well, as opposed to the dog. Moving right along, now, we know about drunk texting. Please tell me people aren't sleep texting.
I didn't even know this was a thing. But apparently people are waking up and finding text messages that they've sent someone. Now, we're not talking about, you know, a random amount of people and it's a small group of people. We're talking about a large group of people. 72% that were part of the study had absolutely no memory of sending texts during the night. And it was really around the idea that when you're asleep, in that little time frame before you actually fall asleep, you don't remember those moments. So that lack of memory causes you to not really think about why you're texting the person or remember why when you woke up. So it can happen a number of times during a sleep cycle. So it's an interesting one. And a lot of people think, I'm not going to text my ex while I'm having a few beers, yet having the phone next to their bed basically means that they're at risk of sending a text message during their dreams, so to speak, or while they're asleep.
I find that very scary.
It is, and I think it's that knee-jerk reaction that we often have. And often, if you hear a beep or a buzz of the phone, that indicates that a call's coming in and awakens the sleeper. And if that happens during the night, they might instinctively reach over and respond to the message. They're still asleep, essentially, and they're not going to remember it in the morning.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. All the sleep experts say have your phone in a different room while you're sleeping anyway. Now, coming up to this time of the year, there are people with all sorts of dietary requirements that are going to cause Christmas lunches to be difficult out there. And one of the things is dairy. Now, we've got almond milk, rice milk, coconut milk, cow's milk, goat's milk. Are we seriously milking spiders?
I don't see a time anytime soon where we're going to be able to buy spider milk from the local supermarket. But what researchers have found is that spiders produce milk and it's actually more nutritious than cow's milk. So this is really a random piece of research. And what was interesting about it was the complexity in the relationship between spiders and their offspring and why they produce milk. But they're not the only strange animal to produce milk. I mean, there's stories all over the place about hooded seals producing milk. And it actually is a very creamy and fatty milk. And so people have said that that's an excellent use for ice cream. Could you imagine? And the idea around having a latte, for example, with wallaby milk,
yeah, no,
isn't completely rare either. So it's actually more around the proteins and the nutritious elements of milk and the fact that it doesn't necessarily need to come from a cow or a goat or what we deem as normalized in terms of milk production.
Yeah, look, I guess for some reason many, many millennia ago we decided to domesticate cattle and use them for milk. I suppose we could have done the same with horses, couldn't we? But we didn't.
Well, this is the thing. It really comes down to what we as a society consider normal. Mm. So the fact that the milk from a nutrition standpoint is valuable, it's the only reason we don't use it is because it's not the norm.
Yeah, okay. On that note, I'm going to stick to my cow's milk. Alex, always good to talk to you. We'll catch up next week.
Thank you so much.
Alex Selyoff from thebigsmoke.com.au.